everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. Syracuse sports make me drink. I'm John Casillo, and with me, as always, is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy, I don't know. What do we got this week?
Happy we're recording during a game once again day.
Again, yeah. This is a lovely thing we get to do all the time because all of our games are Wednesdays, at least for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, and that should be it, hopefully, because I don't want us playing on Wednesday in the ACC tournament. I definitely don't want us playing on Wednesday in the NCAA tournament.
I think we should be. I mean, this is a very natural progression into NCAA tournament talk. I feel like we're okay for now. I mean, at this juncture, obviously things can change. Definitely the ACC. I think it's pretty hard to envision us falling that far back, right? Or when does the ACC tournament start? Like, what day? I forget.
It starts Tuesday now with, like, the play... Like, not the play-in game, but, like, the...
It's like the...
The stupid, like, 12, 13, 14, whatever. Like, it's just, like, I think the 11 through 15 seeds play that day.
So I guess there's a way we could play into Wednesday if we, like, really struggle.
Yeah, if, like, something bad happens.
Down the stretch. So let's not do that.
Yeah, I mean, luckily we started really strong here. I mean, that's kind of the blessing and the curse here is that we started really strong, but we could easily fall back significantly just by way of, you know, having the hardest part of our schedule now coming up.
Right. I mean, I guess I'm okay having the banked wins. I think it's better to have them in your pocket than not, even if that comes from an easier early schedule. But, I mean, right now we're only two games out of first place, and, I mean, I don't expect us to make a run at that. But 8-3 sitting... ahead of Louisville for the fourth spot by a half a game, thanks to their hilarious, just really awful collapse against Duke. And to a point, I like feel bad about it because I know if that was us, I don't even know. We might not even be able to record today.
I would have been apoplectic. And like I follow like a ton of Louisville fans, and I saw so many people, like fans, media, just like completely like mentally like checked out and having no idea what to do.
Yeah, I think that's worse, like, than getting absolutely bludgeoned by Duke. Yeah. It's all the same in the record book. But when Duke just like comes out and smokes you, like they're Duke, they're really really good this year. They're gonna be the favorite to win the tournament. I can like deal with that. And if they do it at the dome, like, you know, I'll get over it pretty quick. to fall after being up 23, with like large swaths of the game, you were like look at the ESPN chart, like a 95-99% chance to win for like. A good third of the game, basically. That's hard to come back from.
Yeah, that is that's absolutely miserable. And then I think too, like, I mean, it's great for us if we beat Louisville. It matters less. But if we don't, then like, you know, that actually still like helps out the Duke game quite a bit because I said it last night on Twitter. Like, you know, I was rooting for Duke and it felt weird, but it also made a lot of sense because now like. I mean, yeah, if Duke lost, we could have potentially been in a better position to, you know, win the regular season conference title. That said, I don't think we're winning the regular season conference title, so I'd much rather a team in competition with us for maybe a double bye takes the L there, as Louisville did.
Yeah, like, obviously there are, like, we know about the net rating, we know about all the other factors that go into NCAA tournament seeding. But there's still, you know, it still comes down to a committee choosing things, and it's not all based on any specific number. I wonder if we should be rooting for Duke to just, like, win out at this point, because we do have the, like, you know, obviously it comes with the Trey Jones injury and everything else, but we are the only team in the ACC play to beat Duke and one of only two teams to beat Duke all year. And I do think that, like, there's a good chance that if there's, like, a tiebreaker scenario between, like, whether it's, you know, getting into the tournament or not, if things go poorly down the stretch, or getting, a more favorable seed or something, like, it could carry some more extra weight, even more than it probably should, based on, like, how numbers work out.
Yeah, I completely agree. Again, like, there's going to be caveats around, you know, Duke's injuries in that game and all that, but nonetheless, like, Duke is still an incredibly talented team. Won games, you know, without Trey Jones, without Reddish, like this isn't a team that was suddenly complete, you know, completely just filled with walk-ons surrounding Zion Williamson. Like the Blue Devils very capable of winning games without at least one of those guys. And the fact that SU was able to catch him napping a little bit, especially in Durham, I think is still a really good thing. But like I've said before, and I know you agree with to an extent, the resume can't just be that. And that's kind of where this, this four-game stretch that we've been alluding to all season comes up. We're at NC State tonight. We're not really going to talk about the game because it's going to be in the past by the time you hear this. Louisville next Wednesday, so we get a full week to prep for the Cards at home. We get Duke that Saturday in a rematch that I am not very hopeful for. And then we are at North Carolina on the following Tuesday, so we're really kind of short turnaround. There are just 2 days to go down to Chapel Hill. Dan, what would you be all right with? I think I'd be fine with 1-3. I think I'd be elated with 2-2.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think if you get one more of the, if you get one from that stretch, I think you're in pretty good shape.
Especially the road games.
Yeah, and which is, you know, we've been playing really well. We're tight with NC State now, obviously not to do the whole thing, but we've played well on the road, which I think does, like Boeheim said the other day, it's obviously, he claimed to not, I think Boeheim probably knows more about the net rating than he leads on. I just don't think he wants to really talk about it.
Right.
Is the more, if I had to guess. But he's not wrong. We're like, you know, it's these non-mathematical things that still, you know, do pop off of the page when you're looking at, like, Syracuse's resume, just line by line. It's a win over Duke, at Duke, a win, you know, a bunch of wins on the road against, like, pretty good teams, even if they're not great teams. And we saw this, we brought it up a couple weeks ago, but we've seen Syracuse teams get into the tournament without a very strong road resume. So it's not the be-all, end-all, but if they can get in with what, like the two road wins we had a couple years ago, I think with the, I mean, I don't know exactly off the top of my head how many we have this year, but it's like, what,
it's
five or six?
Yeah, because we have Pitt, BC,
I'm actually Notre Dame, Duke,
Ohio State being the other important one.
Right. So, yeah, if you have at least like probably two NCAA, I mean, I don't know if Ohio State might fall all the way out, but I figure they'll probably make the tournament, like two NCAA tournament teams, including Duke on the road, like, you know, you're in pretty solid shape, and I don't think there are that many teams of our like ilk that have that will have much better road resumes than that, because it's not like the middle of the ACC is worse than the middle of all these other conferences. I think it's pretty strong this year overall. I feel pretty good about it. And if they can win one of these three like prominent games in this crazy stretch, and then, you know, obviously pick up the Wake and Clemson games, which we've already beat Clemson. Yeah. We haven't played Wake this year yet, but they're the worst team in the conference. That's two more road wins. I think those two being on the road actually kind of benefit us down the stretch here. And then UVA, like, would be awesome, and we've beaten them at home before, and it'll have probably a really, really nice home crowd for that, as well as obviously the Duke game. But, like, I think it kind of takes the pressure off of that and the Duke game and everything else. So I think we've done a pretty good work so far. We only have the one, like, huge tournament, like, you know, highlight win, but there are opportunities here, and this team, even in like some of the lean years recently, we've had a couple of those wins during the years, so it's definitely not like we should pencil in 0-3.
I completely agree there. I think, you know, looking at this stretch here, like I kind of said before the season even started, like, we're probably winning one of those games. I mean, that was even before I like included the NC State game in there. I said the other day in the article that was up on the blog that 3-4 was the most likely. I think 4-3 is possible. Obviously, anything's possible technically, but I think probable. If you're looking at probability, you're looking at somewhere between 2-4 wins in this final 7-game stretch. I would say right now, I think the Louisville dropping the game to Duke makes me far less confident in SU being able to pick them off now. Just because I think that's going to be a team that's a little more motivated than maybe they were. They maybe slept walked in that second half. I mean, obviously Duke's just super talented too, but I don't think you're going to take them by surprise at any other, you know, point in this regular season. So I'll honestly chuck that one up to a loss at this point. That said, if Syracuse loses to NC State, I could see it as a win. So give me a win against one of NC State or Louisville, losses to Duke and North Carolina, a win at Wake, a loss to Virginia, and a win at Clemson. That'll give us somewhere between 7-8 road wins. And that'll give us, again, a 3-4 finish for the season. So that'll be 11-7 in conference. And that'll be 20-11 overall, which, I mean, not exactly what we thought we were getting into at the beginning of the season, but considering how the season started and how non-conference play went, I'll definitely take it.
Yeah, I'm actually, I pulled up just as I was already on ESPN for the box score of this game. Yeah, I'm looking at ESPN's basketball power index projections, and they are not quite as rosy. Although it's, but it's like one game that swings it. They have us finishing 10-8 by rounding. They have us finishing 7th behind Florida State, ahead of Clemson. Thanks in large part because of our number one remaining strength of schedule in the country. Yep. So thank you, ACC.
I mean, that's fine. I feel like we're kind of used to it in the Big East too. But yeah, nonetheless, like I think seven, I'd be bummed because that 7-10 game is always such a bear. And I feel like I was looking at the numbers last year and like the 10 seed wins like more often than not since the, since
right
the
15 now they have team Miami expansion. As a 10.
I mean, so I'm a little more high on that then.
Yeah. Just as Miami's been like, they've been hit so hard by stuff this year. The Hernandez NCAA nonsense.
Right.
And
knowing our luck that we end up facing Pitt.
Yeah, they have Pitt in the 14 game. 14 versus the 14 spot. This is just per BPI. So, and they, for some reason, like, ESPN, I feel like it's been like pretty high on us this year in terms of like the win probability things. So it's definitely like a bit of a course correction. But still, like, they have us finishing 19-11 and or 19-12 and 10-8. So overall, I think, you know, if we do finish 10-8, then I think we probably have to win one, at least one game in the ACC tournament to feel like pretty good about it.
Yeah.
But it's still hard to tell with, you know, how weak and how, you know, across the board the bubble every year now is just so hard to really have a good grasp on.
Yeah, it's tough to gauge because obviously they include, you know, nonsense numbers and everything else to like further complicate matters. I at 10-8, I'm cautiously optimistic. At 11-7, I'm pretty much sold on it.
11-7 would feel like we've been robbed if we didn't get in. 10-8, you could make an argument we should be in, but you can understand like it'll be harder to defend. 11-7, I can't imagine a world in which we're not in, given some of, you know, what we've done, and finishing 11-7 in the ACC in general is just like, you know, it's an accomplishment for a team that's you know, has some issues and isn't great overall. Like you still, to win 11 games in this conference means you're doing something right, even if it's Duke and just kind of getting things done otherwise.
Yeah, and admittedly, like, you know, getting to 10-8 or 11-7 means you're picking up probably two more wins on the road, and you get to 11-7, you're definitely picking up, you know, another quality win potentially on the road as well, depending on if you can beat NC State or UNC maybe. Like, I'm not banking on it, but you know, you look at the top of the conference here though, like Virginia Tech hasn't looked as great. Louisville, I think, is going to bounce back just fine. FSU has really hit their stride, I think, lately. And Clemson has too. You know, both of those teams, you know, Clemson's won 4 straight. We'll see what happens tonight. Florida State's won 5 straight coming in. NC State struggled a little bit lately. Like there is also like a clear kind of drop off after the 9 spot, where you go from NC State currently 5-6 to Notre Dame 3-8. So I think that I don't think we can fall past the 9 line, but I'd much rather be in that, really the 6 or 7 range, to be honest, because then we get to avoid, you know, Duke until maybe a couple rounds in if we can get that far.
Yeah, I would much rather not face Duke again, because we'll get him in the dome, and odds are Duke will really be up for that game.
I think we're gonna lose by 20. I'm like,
yeah, there's a good chance. Like it's so tough. I mean, the odds of you beating that team twice are very low. The odds of you beating the team once and then being like super competitive, I think, are also very low.
Especially when they're actually healthy this time.
Yes. I'm interested to see what the line for that game ends up being. And I will say, like, you know, people just, there is something to be said about the injuries they had, but I still think if we were to rematch at Cameron and you just took Trey Jones and Cam Reddish off of the Duke roster for that game, I think Duke would probably still be like an 8 to 10 point favorite. So it's not like it wasn't an accomplishment to win that game. It's just going to be very daunting, especially because Reddish has really rounded into form recently.
Yeah, I would agree. I think again, they're with everybody healthy, even if you lose one of those guys again for some reason, as long as it's not Zion, I think Duke goes in there, wins by double digits, and that's no embarrassing fact for Syracuse either. I mean, very few teams have really tested Duke at full strength this year, so again, not going to sweat a loss there, assuming we can pick up, you know, another quality win here somewhere. But shifting from whether we make the tournament to if we make the tournament, what would we be doing there? Talking a little bracketology, Dan. I know today, Wednesday, I ran down the kind of the full list of places that we would be seated around the internet. We have everything from a 7 seed, NCAA.com. Andy Katz has us as a 7 seed in the East playing Alabama. USA Today also has us as a 7 seed in the East facing Oklahoma. All the way down to an 11 seed. TeamRankings.com has us as an 11 seed, and we'd probably be in a play-in game. Bleacher Report, Fox Sports, and Sports Illustrated also have us as 10 seeds. So people are starting to... You're seeing like some publications are completely losing faith far too early, and others are probably keeping maybe a little too much faith in the resume right now. Dan, where would you seat us if you had to seat us today?
I feel like we're probably an 8 or 9. 7 seems pretty bullish, and then 11, like, at this point, I think it's really interesting to see that much of a range in our seedings. Yeah. And obviously, like, there's plenty of work to do in terms of what the resume will look like, but, like, usually most people are, like, in the same line or two. So to have, like, a pretty big, like, four-line gap where there's plenty of people with us at, like, a number of different seedings is pretty unique, I think, this late in the game.
I think it speaks to the stupid bubble, and on top of that, like, I think it depends on who's researching what in terms of our resume and everything. Like, if you're somebody who hasn't really followed Syracuse, sees the Oregon and UConn losses, sees the ODU loss, maybe sees the Georgia Tech loss, and doesn't really care about where the wins come, and is giving Duke too much credit, I can see how you'd knock us down to 11. Team rankings is actually based on, like, is much more, like, advanced metrics kind of driven, though. But, yeah, I think the 10s, some of that's probably geared toward, okay, like, you know, not really caring about the Frank Howard absence, not really caring about the Duke win as much because of the injuries at the same time. Like, I agree with you. I think it's a large range, but I think it also speaks to, you know, just how probably deep this bubble is, where I think the bubble probably starts around the 7 line or maybe the 8 line and then goes all the way down from there, when usually bubbles like maybe the last 1 or 2 9 seeds at absolute most, you know, through that 11, maybe 12 line.
Yeah, it's probably not that different than what the NCAA selection committee is like, and I'm pretty sure, like, when you hear every year them changing, you know, whenever they talk about the bubble teams, they seem to have different reasons for why teams got in or did not out. And I think the easiest explanation is that they put the teams in and they figure out the explanation for it later. So, yeah, I mean, I think it just kind of shows what a imprecise science it is in general.
Agreed. Why don't we do just a little bit on the SB Nation bracket here, just to do a little bit of bracketology. As mentioned before, since there is a full basketball show now, we don't really have to be all that that scared of talking about football on this show anymore. So we're going to do that
because we were so afraid of it before.
I know, right? But now, honestly, I don't care. Like, I cared about the complaints to some extent before. Now I don't, because there's an entire show again for you, the basketball only fan. So looking at,
yes, and it's very geared towards those people. So, like, you guys should definitely listen to it. It's very detailed. Definitely gives a really good run on the team. So, those guys are doing a really nice job so far.
Yeah. For those who don't listen to Bobby and Dylan on, Unpeeling Syracuse Basketball, that usually goes up around Monday, Tuesday. Ours goes up later in the week. So yeah, definitely listen to them, because, both of them usually have some really great insights on the site, on Twitter. I know Dylan's done a lot of his gift breakdowns, things like that. So definitely listen to that show for the most in-depth basketball talk from the blog. But looking at this bracket, Dan, I'm going to say, okay, so the East bracket, Duke is the 1 seed. I think there's a lot of, and I said this to Chris DeBerdian, who makes the brackets for SB Nation on Twitter, and he agreed with me. Like, it could be a lot of chalk in round one, but could be a hell of a lot of chaos in round two in all these. I think Buffalo could beat Duke, but I'm going to pick Duke because I think the Bulls have been struggling a little bit and knocked all the way down to an 8 seed at this point. Still, I'll take Duke coming out of the top half of the East. I think they can get by Iowa State. And then in the bottom half, give me Marquette because I feel like they're the only team in that group that I'm really like any sort of confident in at this point.
Yeah, I'm taking Duke as well. I think just after last night, like it's hard to really question them. They're not like going to run through the tournament necessarily. I'm not going to take Duke over the field or anything crazy. They're very young. We've seen young teams, talented teams like this flame out before. But on paper, it's just hard to deny what they've done. There's a path to beating them, but it's not a very easy one for most teams.
Nobody in this bracket.
Yeah, and no one in this bracket, especially with the way Michigan has fallen off. They looked so good early in the year and so confident and so veteran, and they just have not looked great for about a month now. They haven't lost that many games. It's just, like, the shine is definitely off of them a bit. They just lost to Penn State. The best possible night to lose to Penn State, though.
Yeah, that's
to be
true.
Fair. Like, no one talked about that game. I'll do ACC home, or I'll do Duke Florida State. I think Florida State has maybe underachieved. They're just like not quite maybe what people thought coming into the year, but I think they have a lot of talent. We saw it with our game. Like, they ran away from us, and I think we're a bad team. I think there is some talent there. So I will take Duke over FSU. I don't think have they played that this year?
I don't believe so.
So we'll see them. Or we have seen them. I don't believe they've played this year.
They did play this year. Ends up that Duke,
it was close.
Yeah, Duke won by two. Now I remember that game.
Okay, so we might see. I don't know if they had to play again, but yeah, so that was a close one. Obviously, Duke has gotten better, I think, as over the course of the year, as young teams are wont to do. They do not play again in the regular season, maybe in the ACC tournament. But either way, I think Florida State has a lot of potential. I think obviously there isn't a great tournament history of playing above their seed in the tournament all the time. But I'm also just not enthralled by Marquette or Cincinnati or Iowa State. LSU, I think, is actually pretty good, but they're not going to beat Duke. So, yeah, I'll take Blue Devils over Seminoles.
I'll take Blue Devils over Marquette. Heading to Chris's West, we got the Zags as the one seed. I'm going to take Louisville out of the top half here as the four. And then in the bottom half, I'm going to take Washington. I think Hop gets it done.
Thinking about it. Michigan State, Washington. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for this.
This was good. Give me honestly, like, I think a Louisville and Washington Elite Eight would be a lot of fun. I keep picking all ACC teams or close to it every week. I'm going to do it here too, though, probably. Give me Louisville over Washington. I think Hop can get a lot done here. I just think, like, you know, maybe, I mean, he's been involved in a lot of tournaments, but I think this team and his staff, maybe the lack of NCAA tournament experience, unfortunately, just kind of derails him at the end against a really good Louisville team.
Yeah, it's, again, like, I'm not going to say Louisville was in a fold after last night's game, but it does color things a little bit. I'm just concerned about Gonzaga's long-term health. I think the Killian Tilly injury, if that lingers into the tournament, it's going to be rough. And I know they played really well without him, but I'm not buying too much on the West Coast Conference teams. And they were without him against Duke earlier in the year, but still, like, you want to have your best players out there. And that just, you know, he's going to be out for a while, and he hasn't played great when he's been in recovering between injuries. I'm not buying Villanova still. I know that's dumb. They're like really, I mean, they're a great program. I just don't think this team is great. I think they're probably rebuilding. So I'll go Louisville as well. I'll stick safe and go Michigan State. I just think Washington's probably a year away from beating that team in the tournament, but it wouldn't shock me if Washington gave them fits, granted, because of Izzo's recent history against the zone. I think Kansas is just a train wreck right now. There's a very good chance they won't be a three seed at this tournament time.
Yeah.
I feel pretty confident they're not coming to the Big 12, which is crazy. I'll go Louisville over Michigan State.
All right. Yeah, I almost, if I wouldn't go Washington, I'd probably go Iowa down there.
Yeah, I think Iowa's been playing pretty well as of late. I don't think they're super talented, but I think their team's pretty well built.
Yeah.
So I can see them make. I mean, I think it took them last week to do the Elite Eight. So I've definitely thought about that. I think Michigan State's just a little too talented.
Fair.
And they also blew out Iowa earlier this year. Not that it means everything.
That's true, actually. All right, a quick break here for a word from our sponsor, and then we'll get back to the second half of the bracket, some halftime, and then football. All right, now looking at the South bracket here. We have Tennessee as the one seed. Syracuse is an eight in this bracket. I could see, I don't like the Lipscomb matchup just because they're like a really feisty, you know, mid-major team that could take us by surprise here. I do like a potential matchup against Tennessee, not because of the talent, just because of coaching. I'd be tempted. I'm still going to pick Tennessee because I feel like Syracuse just, it's too dependent on, like, our shooting can just go so hot and cold, as evidenced by the current game going on. In the backdrop of this episode,
in which we have played the weirdest lineup of the year in long stretches, and it's getting us back in the game, but we're not going to do this. So,
yeah.
Moving on.
Moving on. In this top half, give me Tennessee. I could definitely be coaxed into Nevada. And in the bottom half here, I could potentially go UNC, but give me Purdue.
So, admittedly, I did, until I pulled up Chris's bracket, I did not know Lipscomb was as good as they are. And yeah, I agree. Like, any time you have a mid-major or low major as a 9 seed, that scares me. That being said, last I looked, they were getting blown out by Liberty, so maybe that helps. Thanks, Liberty. Good friends, always. We never trash you on this podcast all the time. So hopefully we don't have to deal with that. They are scary. They shoot 37% from three. They have a lot of scorers, etc. As like they profile like a good mid-major. So I wouldn't love that. Tennessee's really good. I wouldn't want to face them as a one seed. I've been pretty in on them for most of the year. Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield are among, if not the best duo this side of RJ Barrett and Zion Williamson. And they have the whole like senior thing going on. Rick Barnes not generally known for his NCAA tournament success, I would say, but still not a group I would want to face. I'll take Tennessee out of the top. In the bottom, Purdue, I just feel like they haven't quite played up. I'm gonna go Va Tech. I'm used to doing the ACC thing this week. Obviously, I could do UNC, but I feel like they're just not quite there. I just don't have a great feeling for them as like a two seed. Although I do think, like we've talked about in past couple weeks, like it feels like the twos are kind of weak for twos this year.
Yeah.
Va Tech, I just think they have their defense can be so good and their shooting ability can be so good. That's a pretty, it's not always obviously, but that's a pretty dangerous combo.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I'm gonna take Tennessee out of this group. Dan, who do you got? You think the Vols can do it?
Yeah, I'll take the Vols. I think the Vols, if you just put the, like a different coaching name there, I think we'd all feel a lot better about them.
I would completely agree.
In March, but like that's not to take credit away from what Barnes has done this year, and pretty quickly turning Tennessee into like a really solid program that he inherited that was in a pretty rough place and with a lot of turnover. So, yeah, I'm taking Tennessee.
Looking at the Midwest last, UVA is the one seed here. I'll take the Hoos to get to the Elite Eight. I think they will get to avoid Wisconsin, an old foe of theirs. And I think that Kansas State will actually get through that Sweet 16 against them. On the other side of the bracket, give me Kentucky, and I'll take Kentucky over Virginia in the Elite Eight.
Yeah, I'm going to do the same thing. I just don't love the top half of this bracket. I think UVA has some issues, though they're less pronounced when they're not playing Duke. But they're still, you know, I don't think they're a shoe-in to, like, finally make a run here. I think Kentucky's more talented. I think Kentucky's coming along. Obviously, the loss to LSU the other night is rough. But it was also, you know, pretty controversial. And it's not so good a team that they're going to go undefeated in SEC play. So, yeah, I'll take Kentucky over Virginia in a really, really tight one. Really tight, ugly, low-scoring one. And I've been high on Kentucky for a couple weeks, so I'm going to stay consistent with that, even with the two-point loss to LSU.
Fair. So that gives us the all ACC and SEC Final Four, which is weird and probably unprecedented.
Yeah, so I have Duke, FSU, Louisville, Michigan State. I have Michigan State in there. Tennessee, Va Tech. Yeah, that's very strange. Virginia, Kentucky, this is all weird.
Yeah, for me, yeah, looking at that, my Final Four was, yeah, I had Duke at it. I had Duke as the one, had Louisville as the four. I got Tennessee. Yes, it would be Duke, Louisville as like an ACC play-in game on one side of the bracket, and Tennessee, Kentucky on the other side. I think you end up with Duke and Kentucky, which everyone would hate, except for Duke and Kentucky fans.
Everyone would hate it. It would get a really, really good TV rating.
Oh, it totally would.
It would get a really, really, really good rating. So yeah, not everyone. CBS people would be very happy.
They would. So I would pick. I'd pick Duke to win that game, to be honest. But what about you?
Yeah, I think I've switched. I think Duke's just been so impressive, and we've had like lots of weeks we've had Kentucky and Duke in the same region. Obviously, it switched this week. I think I would go with Duke, but I do think Kentucky would be far more competitive than they were earlier in the year.
Yeah, I agree with that. Cool. So that was bracketology. Now we move on to halftime. Dan, what have you been drinking?
So I've had a nice mix of things. I was in North Carolina for the weekend, so I have to check out a couple things from there. I had a La Pêche Mode from D9 Brewing, which is in Cornelius, North Carolina. I don't know where that is. Apparently, I've had three things from them, which, as you can imagine, was a peach sour, really nice, like kind of delicate peach flavor, but a really pretty well balanced beer overall. We stopped on the way back from the Appalachians to Wooden Robot Brewing in Charlotte, which I had not heard of before, I don't think. I definitely hadn't had anything from them before. We were only there for a little while before a flight, but had a couple of things from them, which were both impressive. And also the space there is really, really cool. If I was in Charlotte more, I would definitely consider that a cool place to hang out in terms of, like, really nice brew pub, good food. And the What He's Having IPA, which is a rock-solid, pretty standard IPA. And then I also have the, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, the Rosaison Hibiscus Farmhouse Ale, which was pretty, like, nice rosy color. Didn't get, like, super hibiscus flavor, nor did I really get rosé flavor. I'm not sure if that's what they were going for, but it is in the name. But overall, just a pretty solid saison. And then I had a Rothaus Pils, after I got back from a German brewery, which I'm not going to attempt to pronounce, which was really, really good. I'm not always a huge Pilsner drinker, but this was really refreshing. Didn't have that, like, kind of, like, inherent stunkiness that some Pilsners have. I know good ones don't, but, like, sometimes I get that flavor from beers that people like. And then I also had a Mardi Gras Bock from Abita. I mostly ordered it because I remembered the Tulane basketball jerseys, which I had to bring up.
They are majestic.
They are some of the best basketball jerseys I've ever seen. They're incredible. And it's crazy because Tulane basketball is probably less of a thing than Tulane football, and yet they continue to kill it on these, like, branding and uniform-based things. So yeah, I saw that, and then I saw Abita was on tap for the month at one of my local bars, and I hadn't had the Mardi Gras Bock, and I needed to have the Mardi Gras Bock considering the jerseys. So I did, and really, really nice Bock. Really drinkable, nice kind of full-bodied brown flavor. So really enjoyed that. Abita's always rock solid. Like, I think everything from them is pretty good overall, so not too surprising there, but enjoyed that.
Nice. Yeah, Tulane, if you're listening, and you might be, please make t-shirts of the Mardi Gras Angry Wave, because he's dope.
Yes.
Like, really need tees. The fact that the jerseys aren't on sale regularly is a crime. But yeah, I very much need that piece of merchandise ASAP. need is kind of a strong word, but whatever. I was up in San Francisco for SF Beer Week this past Saturday, so ran through a bunch of stuff, probably did irreparable harm to my liver. Had from Modern Times at Elemental Magic with Dragon Fruit, Guava, Tangerine, Passion Fruit. It was a super, super good sour. It was only about 5.5%. Modern Times, their Polyrhythmo Pilsner was absolutely excellent. I hope that becomes like a regularly canned thing from them. Also had their Ponderous Climate coffee porter. Then went over to Tornado and had a bunch of Russian River sours at Beatification from all the way back in 2013. Great to get that one with some age on it. Compunction 2015, Intiction a wild ale, and then Propitation, kind of a darker wild ale from them as well. Also had Firestorm Walker's Mind Haze. Hadn't checked that one out yet, but you can find that usually at a lot of like big box stores and stuff like that. If you get regular Firestone distro, went over to McKellar Bar, had a Gigantic's Kolschtastic, also had Logsden Farmhouse Ales from up in Oregon. They're Far West Lambing. And then I had Four Point Mosaic Park, their pale ale. So yeah, bunch of different things. Was glad I remembered it all. Was glad I got back on the plane that night. But fun times.
Did you this is completely unrelated to anything, but I just saw it. You see that Jim Levitt's apparently leaving Oregon?
Well, that's not good for Oregon. Also very predictable considering how the new kind of timetable works.
Yeah, but it doesn't even seem like a post-signing day thing. I think it came out of nowhere based on kind of the reaction to it.
That's very surprising.
Like, usually, like, the beat writers have, like, an idea of who's leaving. But, like, this seems like it just kind of dropped, so I don't know what's going on there.
That's super weird. That's not great for Oregon, a team that was just kind of starting to figure things out on defense again. Oregon also had, like, a top 20 recruiting class for maybe the first time ever. So color me confused.
Yeah, and he's probably the most important assistant on that team. The fact that they were able to hold on to him through the coaching transition is not... I think they held on to him, right? He was already there when Taggart was there. So, yeah, not great. I do wonder, because, like, obviously Levitt has some skeletons in his closet in terms of what happened with his ouster at USF. But he had started to, like, break through to the point where people thought he might get another head coaching job. Obviously, Kansas State was, like, the school that people thought, and he didn't get that job. But it will be interesting to see what the reasoning is there, and if it was just, like, maybe he got another offer or something, NFL offer. Yeah. Hopefully it's that and not anything scandalous, because, like, you know, while we all enjoy, like, the crazy stories, like, stuff that's not good, like, generally isn't great for the sport, and I think we're all kind of tired of scandal in college football.
I would agree. Speaking of college football, we close out with a kind of brief, we have a special interview after this that everyone will hear with Boeheim's Army GM Kevin Belby, so stay tuned for that. But before that, we're going to talk a little bit of football. My annual spring preview stuff starts this week. It'll continue on through the rest of the offseason, so you'll get at least one or two football articles a week. Looking at the depth chart, Dan, this is just a projected depth chart, not one that anyone actually published anywhere. Any surprises for you? And if so, call them out, because obviously this is an audible medium.
No, I don't think there's any, like, huge surprises there. I think we, you know, you could probably call Mo Neal and Abdul Adams co-starters based on how they're using the bowl game, which is always the case for, like, skill position guys. I think the wide receivers are pretty, like, the top four guys, I think, are pretty well established as the top four guys, especially considering Tristan Jackson's impact in the bowl game. But, like, Harris, Riley, and Johnson were, like, the guys by the end of the year. And I think we're all excited to see them moving forward. Offensive line, I think, is where we might see some different things if we are able to land, like, a grad transfer to I know we're in on a couple. And then looking on defense, luckily we return, like, a pretty good amount in terms of defensive line, and our defensive backs are young but experienced. I think we kind of know the guy Trill slides into the starting role, but he had such a big role last year, it's not a huge surprise. Linebacker is going to be the spot, like, there are a lot of questions, as has been the case the last couple of years after a long time where it seemed like we always had experienced linebackers. But overall, I think none of this is overly surprising, and we, you know, kind of know the team we have going forward, which is fun for once.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's still probably a few surprises coming up. Like, Babers mentioned that they were still going after some different players. Right now, there's technically 84 scholarships, but there's two that are kind of hanging around in limbo. We still don't know if Antoine Cordy's coming back. That would be 85 scholarships. And then we don't know if Shai Cullen will be able to requalify and come back for the fall semester. That would be 86. So somebody's leaving. whether it's one of those two players or somebody else.
Odds are someone's leaving either way, just because there's almost always, like, I mean, we've talked about this before on the show, like, there are spots where transfers happen, and it's, like, right after the season, after signing day, obviously it's changed a little bit with the new recruiting cycle, and then after spring ball is another, it's probably the next big one.
Right.
So odds are someone will not be thrilled with their role, or just kind of, you know, maybe they give up the sport, which happens probably more frequently now than it did before, or they're just kind of, like, you know, ready to go elsewhere. So I think their odds are we'll have like a maybe one or two transfers after spring ball or during spring ball.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that. One place there probably won't be any transfers is the linebacker position, though. I know you mentioned like typically we have experience there. As much as I'm like a little wary right now, I have the starters as Tyrell Richards, who got a lot of run last year as kind of a flex linebacker, defensive end, just an edge rusher guy. Andrew Armstrong was kind of in and out of the starting lineup. And then Kadeem Trotter, who hasn't got a ton of burn but has some, like, are the current starters. But I think there's potential for a guy like Lakeem Williams, who struggled with some injuries last year after transferring as a JUCO guy. And then Mikel Jones and Lee Pogba, both of them are true freshmen, but early enrollees, guys who really could challenge for starting roles early on. I think this could remind people a lot of, you know, like Zaire Franklin's first year, where we were, like, Cam Lynch had left. There was a lot of, like, just kind of questions around, like, all right, we have, like, no experience. And then, you know, him and Jonathan Thomas and Paris Bennett, like, kind of plugged right in, and then ended up being 3 years of pretty consistently just starting every game and racking up hundreds of tackles. So, and before, you know, and before that, you know, Cam Lynch did the same thing. And I feel like our linebackers somehow have been able to really not just cycle well, but cycle well in like 3 to 4 year stints too, where we're able to bring up the next group underneath like the wing of a really successful senior class.
Yeah, I think that's been up until this past year, really. And this year, I think our linebackers played pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, second half of the year, Guthrie, because Guthrie ended up being one of the...
I think best Guthrie, linebackers in the ACC.
Yeah, he was, I think, the leading line tackler. If not, if he wasn't, it was pretty close. And then yeah, him and Whitner so, both had 100 tackles on the year.
Whitner played really well moving into that spot. And like you said, like we've pretty it, since basically when Marone got here and he
even
inherited,
before.
I think, Terrell Smith and Doug Hogue and a couple of those kind of guys,
yeah.
We've really rolled through and had really veteran linebacker play almost throughout. The Zaire Franklin comp is pretty interesting. I mean, it's time will tell who it is. But Mikel Jones, is it Mikel or Mikel? I'm not sure the pronunciation.
I've never heard the pronunciation, so I'm gonna go with Mikel, and we're just gonna I think it's close.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. It's the your pronunciation guide in the spring prospectus. So
yes, so Jones and Padua are probably our. I think they're basically our two top ranked recruits, just like per any service. And I figure at least one of them will be ready to step in some role. If it's not starter, then it's T reserve. And as we saw last year, we're not afraid, A, to plug in freshmen on defense in big roles. We saw that with Sisto and Trill Williams last year. Sisto, who was an All-American, and Trill Williams, who obviously, you know, he was not perfect, but had a really, really strong freshman year as a cornerback, as our third cornerback, basically. And at linebacker, we saw guys emerge who we really didn't know last year who the guys were. You had Whitner moving positions. You had Guthrie, who really hadn't played much, and they ended up being highly productive. So we're not afraid to take chances on guys, young guys. We're not afraid to let people just win the job outright, even if it doesn't seem like the guy who will win the job outright, you know, going in. There aren't like preconceived notions, really. And also, I'd rather have, honestly, like, it's great to have experienced linebackers, and we've done well with them, but I'd rather, if I had to choose, I'd rather have experience in the secondary and up front. I think you could hide linebackers a little bit easier.
Yeah, I completely agree there. I think, you know, that was kind of the case for the first half of this past season when the linebackers were struggling, was that you had a very kind of high-risk, high-reward, secondary style of play. You had a blitz-heavy defensive line that was getting a lot of great push, especially from the outside. So I think this year, that as long as there are no other changes that we're unaware of, I think the secondary is going to be top half of the ACC. I think this defensive line is going to be one of the better lines in the ACC, assuming Josh Black can kind of step in and fill in the sort of role that Chris Slayton occupied like this could be a really fun group once again. And yeah, I think I saw enough from Richards that I'm really high on him. From last year, I think Andrew Armstrong showed that he can be a capable middle linebacker. I think, you know, that that strong side linebacker position that could be inhabited by Kadeem Trotter, but maybe somebody else is going to be the bigger question mark. But, you know, plenty more time to discuss all this. We'll actually have some, like, practice tape, maybe not a ton, but some, from the spring to see, like, some of these guys in action, too, we haven't really seen in-game.
Yeah, it'll be nice to kind of start to those get a better idea of who's going to be on this like the official depth chart once we get to spring ball. And I feel like that's when there's always like a surprise or two, even like right off the bat, because obviously Dino sees these guys in the off season, he sees guys in workouts, and he has a much better idea than we do, and you know, making our educated guesses based on last year and based on recruiting stuff. And I think overall, like, even on defense, where we struggled for 2 years before we really came along this season, the moves have worked out pretty well overall. And I think we've had a really nice approach, especially in, like, around midseason when things started to turn around there. So, yeah, it'll be fun, and it'll be fun on offense, I think. We are all excited.
Yeah, I'm 100% on board with that. All right, a quick word from another sponsor here. And then we will wrap up and get to that interview. All right, Dan. So obviously we don't know what's going to happen in the NC State Syracuse game yet. But let's just cross our fingers. Any other thoughts before we sign off here?
No, I look forward to finding out what happens in the NC State Syracuse game. Because again, we got back in this game using a, basically, we just unloaded the bench, and it worked. I think we've played pretty well over the last couple minutes into the half. This will be a really, really nice win. Obviously, NC State isn't like the ranked team they were earlier in the year, but it is another road game, and it's a probable tournament team. So this is another really nice opportunity, and we've had pretty mixed results in the game night podcast. So hopefully, this one's for the better.
Yeah, I'm very much hoping this one works out. Just from a wins perspective, I have confidence in the content. It's the win that we're looking for here. But yeah, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you everybody for listening to Troy Noons and Absolute Podcasts. Syracuse Sports Make Me Drink. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes. We have some obviously new things going on with the podcast here, so we are no longer on Blog Talk. We're on some other service, and we'll be hopefully in every podcast store that you're, you know, looking to download stuff from. And stay tuned for my interview again with Boeheim's Army GM Kevin Belby.
Yes, and go Orange.
Go Orange. And special to Troy Noons and Absolute Podcast this week, we have a very, very important guest. You've heard all about Boeheim's Army these last few years, and we get to talk to one of the men behind the team, Kevin Belby. How's it going?
It's going a lot better now that I had that fabulous introduction. I appreciate that, John.
Do what I can. For those who have not been paying attention of late, Kevin's been the general manager of Boeheim's Army, and like I said, been one of the main people in terms of orchestrating this thing and turning it into what it is. So getting right down to business, Kevin, how excited are you to have this team host a few games in the Syracuse area?
I really couldn't be more excited. It's been a long time coming, and this is going to be our fifth year, somehow, crazy enough, already participating in the basketball tournament. And we've played all over the place. We've played up and down the East Coast and Brooklyn and Philly and Baltimore, Atlanta, played all the way out in Chicago. And in every one of those cities, every year, you know, ever since our first game, we've had the best crowds, we've had the best fan base. So I'm just glad that we're going to be able to go up to Syracuse and, you know, show some of those fans, a lot of those fans who maybe couldn't make the road trips, what this is like in person. And obviously we're going to have a huge competitive advantage from it as well. You mentioned the word home game. That's really what it is. It's going to be essentially home games for us. And when you're playing for $2 million, you're going to take any advantage you can get.
It's true. So do you think, or I mean, you might have actually had conversations with the basketball tournament. Do you feel like Syracuse's abilities to draw these crowds, no matter where they were part of why they went to sort of this quote unquote on campus type environment, and also because, and also why Syracuse was included in that group?
Yeah, I think that the fan base is certainly the biggest driving factor of why the games will be up there. In addition to a bunch of different factors, including that we've always had incredibly competitive teams. You know, Syracuse as a city, I think, is well geared to host a tournament like this. You know, I talked to the tournament organizers for the last couple of years, kind of pitching them on this idea, and I was like, look, if Syracuse is a good enough city to have an NCAA tournament regional site, it certainly can have the basketball tournament regional site there. And, you know, just talked about the state fair and how, you know, the entire state of New York has their fair up in Syracuse. And, you know, it's for a reason, a bunch of different reasons, but there's all the lodging you need. You know, 81 is right there. There's an airport, hotels, that stuff is easy. And, you know, the harder thing probably to find is a fan base that cares about basketball. And in Syracuse, you don't have to look too hard to find a bunch of basketball fans.
Would have to agree, especially I know some of the podcast detractors will usually have a lot of complaints when we don't talk about the basketball team enough. You don't necessarily hear the same complaints about football. So as much as we might be on our way to being a football school again, I would definitely agree that men's basketball in particular, you know, kind of rules the conversation. But, like, Kevin, looking at some of the past seasons that you've been involved, have you had a favorite game, one that in particular, win or lose, like, really stuck out to you, you know, years later or months later, whatever it may be?
Yeah, probably a couple different games. I mean, probably our first game ever in Philadelphia, that was pretty cool because I just had no idea what to expect. You know, nobody could have showed up, or we could have lost, you know, or our players could have bailed. But just – it's funny, I don't know if you've been to one of our games, or I'm sure you've at least watched them. Our games start the exact same way a game starts in the Carrier Dome. Everybody's standing and clapping, you know, so it that tradition has carried us to different cities, and it's just ever since that first stand and clap in Philadelphia, I kind of had the feeling that this was something special. And then, you know, there was the absolutely amazing game in 2017 in Brooklyn at LIU Brooklyn, where we were in the Elite Eight, I believe that was, against Team FOE. And, you know, we just had an incredible, incredible comeback. And I remember we were down by, you know, over 20 points, and just looking around in the huddle and seeing that, you know, I honestly thought we were going to lose. Because I'm normally a very, very positive person, but I was looking at the guys' faces, and they just looked they didn't look that interested, you know, that enthusiastic. And then looking back on it, I realized that no, they were just calm. They weren't panicking. They weren't blaming each other when they were down 25 points with 12 minutes left. They still believed in each other, and you know, somehow we pulled off that miraculous comeback. So, you know, that's something that that always, it's one of my first memories when I think of our team in the tournament.
That's awesome. Is there any team that you either love to play or love to hate to play in the tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I think the team, probably the most hated team, it's kind of the Golden State Warriors equivalent of the basketball tournament, which is Overseas Elite. And, you know, we had a chance to beat them in 2017 in the Final Four. And, you know, we were right there with them. We only lost by a few points, and just felt like a couple balls bounced a different way, we could have beat them. You know, they've won the tournament several years in a row now, so would love to get the chance to beat them. But it's always fun to play other college alumni teams because they'll also have, you know, strong fan bases. And, you know, we haven't played really any former traditional Syracuse rivals, but there have been Seton Hall alumni teams. We did play a Marquette alumni team last year. It didn't go too well for us. Clearly I blocked that out of my memory.
as we usually do when,
right, exactly. But that was a fun game, and, you know, we'll see what other teams pop up this year.
So I know that, you know, you're going to have a big release cycle and all that in terms of who's going to be on the team this year. But is there anything you can share now around who might be involved this year, even if you can't confirm for sure?
Yeah. I mean, Ryan Blackwell will definitely be back as our head coach, you know, obviously former Syracuse player, and he's doing a great job up in Syracuse now as Liverpool head coach. You know, he's really turned that program around. He gotten them, I think they won a state championship last year, weren't undefeated for a long time. And he's been great with our players because the guys respect him. You know, as somebody who played at Syracuse, as somebody who is a coach, you know, he's taking this seriously. He wants to be a coach for a living, you know, at the college level or at the pro level. He actually did coach pro overseas. He played in Japan and then coached in Japan. So, you know, he's not just rolling out the ball and letting these guys do his thing. He gets on them. And so anyway, he'll be back. You know, Eric Diebendorf is a guy who's been in the basketball, who's been with me since day one of putting this together. And it would be weird not to have him play. We hope that he'll be back, and it's really, you know, he can play in this for as long as he wants to. He does have a new coaching gig now out in Detroit at UD Mercy.
And so I'm so throw a shoe kinda, last week.
I did. It was a nice toss. It was a nice toss by him. Felt like he should have gotten rewarded for that instead of punished. But, you know, I hope he'll be back. And then we'll see everybody else. It's tough. You know, there's a lot of interest right now, but it's still 5 months out from the games. And the one thing about the tournament, it is a tremendous opportunity, $2 million and exposure to play on ESPN. But there's no guarantee, you know, it's winner take all. So our guys aren't signing contracts on the dotted line, committing to play for us. It's something that we just figure out as we get a little bit closer, because these guys that they play 9-10 months overseas in Israel and Spain and Turkey. And they kind of need to catch their breath, see how their bodies are feeling, see what they're up to over the summer. But, you know, I think that there will be a lot of enthusiasm about playing, one, because we had a great team last year and made it pretty far, and two, because we're going to be playing up in Syracuse. And I think these guys are going to be excited to come back to campus and play in front of fans again up in Central New York, have orange on their chest. It's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait. And I'm sure everybody listening too is, you know, similarly excited. I haven't been able to get to any games just because being out on the West Coast, not as easy to get back. But I'm sure there'll be thousands and thousands of folks, you know, in Syracuse for these games. Kevin, before you go, one more thing about the current Syracuse roster. What are you thinking in terms of Syracuse's NCAA tournament chances this year? You feel like they're in it as an enlarged team, or do you feel like this is going to be kind of down to the wire again?
I mean, I think at the end of the day, what I've learned, at least, and I think what Syracuse fans too have learned the last couple of years, is what matters is who you beat. And you know, I think that win in Cameron will be a big factor for them come Selection Sunday. And you know, at the end of the day, the team controls their own destiny. You look at the schedule, a lot of great opportunities. It's a tough schedule, but a lot of great opportunities left. And I think that's actually the word that Tyus Battle used yesterday in an article I saw on Syracuse.com. I think he said, this is about, you know, there's a lot of opportunities we have. I don't really look at it as, you know, a scary schedule or a challenge. So, you know, playing Virginia, playing Duke, playing UNC left, playing Louisville, this team really, I think they could be as high as a five seed, you know, if not maybe a four, if they win a lot of these big games. And then, you know, on the flip side, if they don't win them, then it'll be a very nervous Selection Sunday again. But I think this team just has to get in, and you know, they've proven that they can win the big games. That game down at Duke, I was really fortunate to be there in person, and you know, there were literally 20 times where you could have said, well, that's it, you know. it was a good game, but you know, now they're gonna pack it in, and it was a good fight. And no, they never stopped fighting, and they kept pushing and pushing, and they weren't afraid of playing down at Duke and playing against Zion. And that's the type of attitude you need to win the NCAA tournament. So I just hope they get in and get a good seed and get a good draw. And then I think Coach Boeheim has shown that he and his teams, along with the zone, anything can happen.
Yeah, I mean, and this team in particular has played really well in road environments. Obviously, they'd be playing in neutral sites. But yeah, the road games this year, they've looked really good. We'll see what happens against NC State. They'll have the game against UNC as well on the road. So a lot still left to do this season. I have some faith, but yeah, this four-game stretch is probably going to decide it.
Exactly. I agree. Couldn't agree more.
All right. Well, Kevin, really do appreciate you coming on. It was awesome to talk a little bit about Boeheim's Army, and we're looking forward to this summer.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate you having me on. Maybe we can do it again when we get a little bit closer. Should be a blast this summer. The games in Syracuse are going to be July 26th to the 29th at the SRC Arena at OCC. So if you're listening and you're up in Central New York, hope to see you there.
Perfect. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, John.